From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Friday, December 13th, and here are today's headlines. A legislative committee is recommending that agricultural workers in Vermont get state minimum wage and also receive overtime pay after working 60 hours a week. Agricultural workers have historically been left out of labor laws in the U.S. Scholars argue this is due to racism because farm workers were disproportionately black at the time the laws were enacted. In Vermont, the legislative committee also examined whether farm workers should have collective bargaining rights, but ultimately didn't make a recommendation to the full legislature. And that's disappointing to Will Lambeck, an organizer with the nonprofit Migrant Justice.
We think that it's important to end this sort of double standard of farm workers being treated differently from other workers.
Still, Lambeck said his organization was glad the legislative committee recommended farm workers receive state minimum wage. A new study shows Vermont has become a popular place to move to since the COVID pandemic. The state treasurer's office analyzed recent census data and found that on a per capita basis, Vermont had the highest net in-migration of any New England state and the third highest rate in the U.S. last year. Vermont had a net gain of roughly 7,500 new residents in 2023, with about one-third coming from Massachusetts. Treasurer Mike Pichek says remote work flexibility and outdoor recreation opportunities are the key reasons people are flocking to the Green Mountain State. But he says the report also highlights Vermont's affordable housing challenges.
Whether it's housing that you want to buy or housing that you're renting, and that is why I think we need to continue to stay laser focused on expanding housing of all types in Vermont.
As for out-migration as opposed to in-migration, the report says the two most popular states for Vermonters to move to last year were Illinois and Utah. Now, if you're not a fan of spiders, there is some new research involving the arachnids that might improve your opinion of them. A discovery by researchers at the University of Vermont and St. Michael's College is providing new insight into Alzheimer's disease by studying spider brains and is helping to gain a better understanding of how the condition develops in humans. Dr. Ruth Fabian Fine directs St. Mike's neuroscience program. This week on Vermont Edition, she said the significance of their discovery has been weighing on her, given the circumstances facing many Alzheimer's patients.
I will be honest. It was psychologically, and still is until this other paper is out, is really challenging because I know people don't have time and I want to be as fast as possible to push this forward.
Fabian Fine and her colleagues hope a deeper understanding of the human brain could lead to new methods of treating brain degeneration. And Woodstock residents approved two measures this week tied to the purchase of the local water system. Residents voted in favor of Woodstock getting a $1.6 million bond to purchase a new reservoir owned by Woodstock Aqueduct Company. And they approved an almost $7 million bond to upgrade the water system, which residents voted to buy from the company in October. The Valley News reports the latest votes came after months of public forums and disagreement over how much of the bonds would be repaid through water bills versus property taxes. Woodstock officials say they expect to close on the sales of the water system and reservoir property in the spring. Coming up, after reforms were made to Act 250, Vermont's land use law, developers are rushing to build more housing. Vermont Public's Carly Berlin has details on the effort to spur new development after this.
The Frequency is sponsored by the Autosaver Group's year-end sales event going on now at all 15 dealerships in Vermont and Western New Hampshire. Savings on their entire lineup, from trucks, SUVs, and EVs to fuel-efficient cars and family-friendly models. Inventory from all stores at autosavergroup.com. And Gills Point S Tire and Auto Service, offering tire and brake service, oil changes, and state inspections. Online at gillspointstire.com.
Earlier this year, lawmakers passed big reforms to Act 250, Vermont's land use law. Those changes included some temporary carve-outs for new housing. Lawmakers hoped they would encourage developers to build more homes to ease Vermont's acute housing shortage. Now, those home builders are taking legislators up on the offer. Reporter Carly Berlin joined host Jen Jarecki to break down the details.
Okay, so to start, Carly, can you give us a refresher on the law that passed earlier this year that reformed Act 250? I mean, like, what exactly was it aiming to do?
So this law, Act 181, sets up this long process to basically overhaul how Act 250 works over the course of the next few years. But in the meantime, the law put in place a bunch of temporary exemptions for new housing. Generally speaking, an area is already designated for growth. Basically, that means developers would generally still need to get a local building permit, but they'd be able to move their projects forward without having to get an Act 250 permit, which can add a lot of time and money and risk to the development process. As of now, those temporary Act 250 exemptions are all slated to sunset after a couple years, but for the moment, developers have taken notice.
So you went and looked at projects that have already gotten a thumbs up that they won't need to go through Act 250, right?
Yeah, exactly. So since this new law took effect this summer, we found about a dozen housing developments that have used one of these temporary exemptions. We went through proposals that got an official thumbs up from an Act 250 coordinator that the project won't need a permit because of these recent carve-outs. And these projects are spread out across the state. They're at all different scales, all different affordability levels.
What kind of development projects are on the list?
There's a conversion of a former nursing home into 40 apartments in Hartford, a new subsidized senior housing project in downtown St. Johnsbury, and a hotel plus apartments development in the heart of Rutland. And not all housing projects might be seeking an official opinion on this, so there could be more that we don't know about. Alex Farrell, the commissioner of the Department of Housing and Community Development, told me these exemptions are starting to work as intended. He added, a lot of these projects were probably already in the works, so the benefit they're getting is a quicker development timeline, and that's great. But the bigger impact, Farrell said, will be when developers start to expand the number of homes they seek to build.
That's going to be exciting to me. I think this coming spring and summer, we're going to see probably some really exciting results.
From your reporting, Carly, it sounds like some developers are doing that already. You know, like building homes they say they wouldn't have taken on otherwise.
Peter Kahn is a great example of that. He's a developer in Vergennes. A few years ago, he made plans to build a 9-unit workforce housing apartment building there on Armory Lane. 9 apartments instead of 10 to avoid bumping up against Act 250. Then last year, after the legislature made some temporary tweaks to Act 250, he realized he could build 24 apartments on the same lot without Act 250 kicking in. So he quickly added that 10th apartment and started hashing out plans for another 14-unit building on the same site. And then this year, the legislature passed these even bolder Act 250 reforms. Kahn learned he could add a couple more homes on Armory Lane. And now he's started sketching out plans for a much larger 74-unit apartment complex on a vacant lot near the police station in town. He's shaping that project around a new temporary Act 250 exemption for 75 units or fewer in certain areas designated for growth.
100%, we are tailoring the project around that exemption.
By the way, Kahn said that first 10-unit building opened up this summer, and all the homes were filled within 2 weeks.
Okay, so we're starting to see some real impacts from this housing legislation passed last session. Carly, lawmakers returned to the State House in January. What should we be keeping an eye on when it comes to housing?
Yeah, Alex Farrell, the housing commissioner, said state officials want to see some updates made to this big Act 250 bill from last year, doing things like extending these interim exemptions till the new Act 250 framework is finalized to make sure there isn't a gap there. I've also heard from Farrell and from lawmakers that there is interest in taking on the appeals process for housing this coming year. This was kind of the unfinished business last session. There were a bunch of proposals to change when and how neighbors can challenge new housing in the courts, which is a key issue at both the local and state permitting levels in Vermont. Those appeals can delay or shrink or even kill housing development sometimes. I expect we'll see some of those appeals reform proposals resurface in January.
That was Report for America Corps member Carly Berlin speaking with host Jen Jarecki. Carly covers housing and infrastructure for VT Digger and Vermont Public. And now it's time for our weekly recap of news from the world of sports. And let's start with some good news for a change for fans of the Boston Red Sox. The past few years have been less than stellar for one of baseball's most storied franchises. The Sox have missed the playoffs 3 years in a row now and finished in last place in their division 3 of the past 5 years. But this week, the team traded for one of the top pitchers made available this offseason, acquiring Garrett Crochet from the Chicago White Sox in exchange for 4 minor league prospects. Here's why fans of both Soxes should be excited. Boston is getting a 25-year-old left-hander who pitched for literally the worst team in modern baseball history. Last year's Pale Host squad lost more games than even the New York Mets did in their debut year of 1962, and yet he was still an all-star for Chicago. He struck out 209 batters last year while walking just 33. His fastball tops out at 97 miles per hour. Plus, he's got a great sweeping slider and cutter in his arsenal, and Crochet will certainly be the ace of Boston's squad next season. Given that pitching was Boston's major weak spot last year with one of the league's worst combined earned run averages, this fills a big need without costing Boston a ton of money. It does cost them a potential all-star catcher in Kyle Teal, ranked by ESPN as the fourth best minor leaguer in Boston's farm system. He is the prime prospect of the four heading to Chicago. But hey, that's partly what prospects are developed for, to attract proven big league talent rebuilding teams like the White Sox are willing to part with. So this is a win-win for both clubs in different ways. The caveat here is that the Red Sox cannot rest on their laurels with this acquisition. While the rival New York Yankees lost one of the game's best power hitters in Juan Soto to free agency, after the New York Mets spent more money than the GDP of many small nations to acquire him, the Yankees countered by spending more than $200 million to snag left-hander Max Fried, one of the other top arms available. So, given that Boston was reportedly very much interested in spending big bucks to get Soto, but couldn't quite stomach the $765 million price tag the Mets paid, Boston should spread around that potential money to get even more pitching. That could mean shelling out a huge contract to Corbin Burns, the Orioles ace who is likely to get even more money than Fried did from the Yankees, or perhaps to be more thrifty, take a chance on Japanese phenom Roki Sasaki, who is available now for all 30 teams and will not come with a hefty price tag. Sasaki put up great numbers in Japan, and while that's not a guarantee of success in the bigs here in the U.S., it's a low-risk, high-reward scenario because he's under 25 years old and is therefore subject to restrictions governing international amateur players. That means the right-hander will command a signing bonus no larger than around $7.5 million. Yes, that's a ton of money to you and me, but not to the owners of Major League Baseball teams. And I think it's a sign of Sasaki's compete level and character that he didn't want to wait until he was older to come to the States to play and garner a bigger paycheck. He clearly wants to win now and to be playing at the highest level he can, so I like a player that appears less concerned about money than he does about excelling in his prime years of play. So, my dream scenario is to woo Sasaki to Boston, ink a fat contract for slugging outfielder Teoscar Hernandez, who has great career numbers at Fenway Park, by the way, add another bullpen arm or two, and faster than you can sing Sweet Caroline, the Red Sox will be back in contention for postseason baseball next year. Regardless of how the rest of the offseason goes following the Crochet deal, it is just nice to feel at least a little excited as a Red Sox fan about the upcoming season for the first time in a while. The other big sports news to talk about is the University of Vermont men's soccer team, which is running today against the University of Denver in the semifinals of the NCAA Division I tournament. The Catamounts have already made program history, getting past the quarterfinals for the first time ever. And if they win today, they'll be playing for the national championship. Game time is 5 p.m., and the contest will be broadcast live on ESPN and ESPNU. And that's our weekly look at news from the world of sports. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Elodie Reed, Bob Kinzel, Michaela Lafrac, and Adia Golston. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. I'm off Monday, but The Frequency will still be here for you, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Every episode of Brave Little State begins with a question about Vermont that's been submitted and voted on by listeners like you. What happened to all the restaurant workers? What's the deal with Vermont's fire towers? Why do people like the band Phish? Follow Brave Little State wherever you get podcasts. From Vermont Public, part of the NPR network.